So yesterday was a not a good day at the stadium. Not a good day at Huntington Bank Field. I mean, there's no way around it. No matter what you thought of Deshaun Watson before, there was a gaggle. There are people who disagree with me. They act as if there was 66,000 people. I don't care what any of you say. To my dying day, I'll take it. I think it was a very loud, very small minority of people who were cheering. I think that once, by the way, they saw how severe the injury actually was, I think that that changed. Tom Withers has documented that, who was there from the Associated Press. I was in the stands. I was at that game. And I'm, guys, 16 out of 17 games for the Browns, I go to my office and I watch at home. That was the game I was in the stands with. My buddy Jason was in town. I've known Jason since I was 5 years old. I sat with Jason. I sat with his friends, which was weird because they were like, some of them were from his work and they were Bengals fans. Yeah, you didn't see Jerry Jeudy throw his helmet yesterday?
I did not see that.
Yeah, Jerry was a very upset person yesterday. So I was sitting there. It was weird because I was with a gaggle of second time I've used that word. I was with a group of Browns and Bengals fans. So usually I'm with a group of like-minded individuals, and there's a lot of people who are just very upset. It was very odd that a person two seats next to me was whooping it up every time the Bengals did something. Which I'm like, I got to accept this. I'm not going to be nasty and inhospitable here. I know what I saw, and that has definitely taken away anything that happened on the field, to the point where Daryl believes that it may have been a choreographed thing for them after that game to go after the fans for the Deshaun Watson reaction. I do think that some of them may have conflated the pregame where, yep, there were definitely boos. And Myles Garrett, what Myles said in the postgame, you know, Myles himself said a month ago that you're a paying customer, you're allowed to boo. I don't think anybody who's sane, I think I'm a sane person for the most part. I mean, yeah, there's definitely screws loose there. But I would not condone cheering a guy getting hurt. And you and I have had that conversation before on this show. I have not condoned that. If you want to boo, that to me is, you're not throwing anything. You're not cussing. I don't think it does any good. I never said it does any good. I think it's therapeutic. You want to boo, boo. But when a guy gets hurt, there were some people, yes, there were definitely people cheering. I gave you the eyes on what I saw of the guy who was cheering. And that guy didn't stop cheering, and there were a lot of people telling him to shut up when he was cheering. But by the time the cart came out, I think a lot of people's tenor had changed. Now, all of that, where it's not put to rest, because we'll continue to dredge this up, and I'm sure we'll get to it, because, damn it, Greg Newsom, who was talking tough, I'm sure he's going to get burned, and there's going to be some people going, how dare you tell me how to be a fan when you can't do your job? I'm sure the other guys who said that, they're going to be, it's going to be brought up. And Rodney was one of the people who agreed with the players, and Rodney's going to be in here in studio at this time tomorrow. And we're going to have to talk it out, and it might get a little bit odd. So all that put out there, it does distract from, you call a reverse pass on second down. All right, I understand that. You'd run a draw on third and five? Were they around the 30? I mean, it wasn't necessarily high red, but it was getting close. You're getting close
Did
to going in.
Did they need 3 yards, too? Was it 2 or 3 yards they needed on that play?
So, you got your quarterback there. He's completing short downs. He's completing short throws. You couldn't put the ball in his hands. You had to run that draw. The pre-snap penalty, like Nick Chubb got into the end zone. After the injury, Nick Chubb gets into the end zone. The place erupts. We have a pre-snap penalty because we can't get guys on the line of scrimmage correctly? Professional football players?
It felt like every time they gained any kind of yards, it was illegal formation, illegal motion. We had a guy yesterday called for offsides on offense.
I'm talking about with Michael Dunn.
When the official said offsides, the fans got excited.
Because you're lined up too far.
You don't see offsides called on offense.
No, you see that in middle school football is where you see that. Guys, everybody knows, man, I like Kevin. If you know this show, you know we get along with Kevin and we like the guy personally. I can't defend that. That's silly. It's dumb. It's not practiced well. It's not plotted out well. And I can give you every excuse in the world. Oh, Michael Dunn in an everyday starter and all this. No, there's no excuse for that. They're professional football players there. I got a backup quarterback who didn't know he was a backup until Friday and running a quote-unquote package of plays that he may or may not even have known that he was going to run Where are we doing? Why is everything a magic trick that has to have a prestige to it to Dorian Thompson-Robinson every time we put him out there? Why is everything like that? Now, I can like a guy personally and say, it was a bad day at the office, and holy hell, was it a bad day at the office. They look listless on offense, even with Deshaun Watson in the game. They look listless on offense. They looked unplanned, unprepared, not ready to play this football game, and a game that they usually do well. Because if you look at what Joe Burrow did yesterday, he still wasn't that good.
He was confused.
It was a house of horrors for him in there, and you let him off the hook in the words of Dennis Green. That's exactly what you did. This is a massive distraction, and we should talk about it, but damn it, it has to be said. Yesterday was as poorly coached and poorly planned as I've ever seen in 4 years and now 7 games with Kevin Stefanski.
I think 29 or so other teams would have beaten the Bengals yesterday. Like, they were not there to win. The Bengals looked terrible. The Bengals were horrible. Credit to Jim Schwartz. I don't want to say it was all about, you know, one thing or another. I do think our defense... I thought they played, for the most part, really well. You can't shut teams out. It's just not going to happen. And again, our offense, you're going to have to do more than dink and dunk in this day and age of the NFL to try to win. It's why Pittsburgh changed their quarterback out, by the way. And it's not like Russell Wilson is some guy that's going for it all on every possession. But my God, these teams are telling you with their quarterback decisions now that you have to be able to extend the field. You have to go downfield. And Watson was not willing to do it. It's why he had great numbers and had no points. It's why they couldn't get touchdowns.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. Jimmy and the ownership group, they don't want to make changes. They've been through the quick changes before. But if this continues, you're going to have to look at this and say, what are we doing for the future of the franchise? Because I told you, with the injury, there is a minor blessing for him in the case of, you've taken all the pressure off Deshaun Watson now. These are 2 years in a row of, I imagine he's out for the end of the year. I can't imagine he's not. This is 2 years in a row of season-ending injuries. So now physically, you don't know if he can do it. When it comes to emotionally, I don't know if he can do it now. I mean, you saw what he was, and now you have a point where, hey, I can keep him on the roster. I'll draft a quarterback either number one or high in the draft, because that's what they'll do, because they're obsessed with finding quarterbacks, and he will look for a quarterback. Jimmy Haslam will, until the end of time, they will look for a quarterback. They're obsessed with him in the league, and he knows what it can do for his football team. So they'll go out and they'll draft another guy, and we'll sink or swim with that guy. But that's a case where now you can put him on the sideline, and everybody is going to be looking at him. Everybody is going to be looking at him and having terrible feelings for him. They're going to be looking at whatever number Cam Ward wears, whatever number so-and-so wears. That's what they're going to be looking at. So you can put him on the sideline and go, okay, now we can relax you a little bit and see where we can go from here. Or it's just over. Because before, I didn't think you could bring him back out there. But that's another conversation. You need to look, as time goes on, is this the right leadership? Is this the right organization? Are we structurally sound? And that has to go to the man who lives in San Diego, who was in here yesterday, in town yesterday, to Andrew, to Kevin, to everybody. This becomes an entire office evaluation. And if you believe that you don't want to make changes, fine. Yeah, I don't advocate for guys to get fired, because you're admitting you failed at something. People get excited about firings. You have failed, and you have wasted time if you have to fire somebody. So I don't advocate for that. But yesterday, I can't defend that, defend that. That was poor. It was poor.
They have 10 more games?
Yes.
They have 10 more games. In our history of doing this...
No, they're 1-6. They got 11.
They got 11. Okay, enough. My God. There's so many games left. In the history of us doing this...
Don't let the time do you. You do the time.
That's right. All the years that we've been hosting, and not just us hosting, but just being in town and seeing how this works, it never gets better. It only gets worse. And... as much as I'd love to sit here and talk about the great things I think Stefanski has done, as much as I'd like to talk about some of the really good things that Andrew Berry has done, it's going to be hard for them to save their jobs, because this is only going to get worse. The players are already frustrated. Jerry Jeudy throwing his helmet. Elijah Moore suspended for a half. Okay, this stuff is going to snowball. There's no other way for it to go.
And that's why they want to take a. I know they want to take a look at Dorian Thompson-Robinson. You're going to need Jameis Winston in there. He is the veteran. He is a guy that gets people excited. He is a captivating speaker. There's no doubt about it. If you want to keep these guys, I mean, unless you want Jerry Jeudy to completely lose his mind.
Wait, is the organization going to dictate, though, who should play?
I don't have anything against Dorian Thompson-Robinson.
Deshaun Watson would have been benched on any other team in the NFL.
Okay. I don't have any. You're right about that. I don't have anything against DTR, but at the same time, I know they want to see something, and I don't think that he's shown anything that tells me that he's going to be a future franchise quarterback here. So the only thing that you're going to do now, unless you just don't care about the other veterans, guys who you've traded for, by the way, unless you don't care about the other veterans there, then you'll do what's necessary to get you to April. That's what you'll do. But if you want to keep some of these guys and keep their emotions with you, you're going to have to play Jameis Winston. You're going to have to take the vet. You're going to have to get bring in the veteran that people take seriously, and try that first before you go to Dorian Thompson-Robinson. I believe you should play Jameis Winston because you owe it to your veterans. This is not a young 0-16 football team anymore, where most of these guys should just be thankful they're playing in the NFL in an NFL jersey. There are still at 1-6, which is crazy to say, there are still viable NFL veterans on that team that deserve better. And if you're making a decision to do right by your players, Jameis Winston is starting against the Baltimore Ravens on Sunday. If you are interested in getting ready for the offseason, then DTR will start on Sunday, and you'll do everything you can to get DTR prepared. But you are also getting ready to warm up the phones on all these other veterans out there. So it's your choice. I mean, we are, without a doubt, we are at a crossroads here in this season. And they need to make that decision. 216-474-0092. I want to get to some people on this. Where exactly do we go? Because if I just can't believe that we're so taken aback by... I know what happened in the stands there, but my God, it was just so poorly coached yesterday. Aaron in Cleveland. Aaron, hello.
How you doing? Good morning.
I'm doing okay, Aaron. Go right on ahead.
All right. I know you guys like Stefanski, but let's just start there.
All right.
Stefanski is biting off too much, more than he can chew. He's trying to call plays, read defense, making sure the current play doesn't need to be audible, and a lot of other things going on. We've had three incidents that I can remember where the clock ran out, delay a game. That should never happen because now any quarterback, not just Deshaun, but all the quarterbacks are relying on you to manage the clock when it gets to 15 seconds when the comms cut off. So that's unacceptable. And we all know he ain't no real good player. He's not a good call player, play caller, I'm sorry.
Well, what do you want him to do this year?
They really need to start there first with stopping him from calling plays. He got too much on his plate to manage and pay attention to.
Do you have confidence in Ken Dorsey?
Well, I don't. You know what? I would rather him do it because then Stefanski can focus on the things that the key things that he should be focusing on. Because the formation problem that we had yesterday crazy. The penalties, 75, 66,
totally agree
70,
with that.
71. Totally agree. Our offensive line is terrible.
I agree
Our
with
offensive
you.
Line is so terrible. And you need to focus on that.
It's very
play calling you shouldn't see, be just your shouldn't be your focus along with all of the other major things.
Aaron, offensive coordinators
in the game is bad.
Offensive coordinators, when things go bad, sometimes they can go back to old habits. And old habits is calling plays, calling offense, and they don't necessarily manage the game, and they can't manage the game. And we've actually seen this before. When things were as bad as they could be with Joe Woods, you saw him, he was distracted. And he wanted a guy that he could bring in and run this defense, that he didn't have to worry about this defense. See, because at first, when if you wanted to bring in Ken Dorsey, I thought I was going to get an answer, well, it can't get any worse. Well, that's not a reason to go to Ken Dorsey. But if you're talking about taking something off his plate, you know, I'm open to that. Because yesterday was, and Aaron, thank you very much for the call, because yesterday was an abomination of football. You were in week 7. We continue to have these penalties. And you can give me everything you want. I mean, there's guys here. Yeah, Michael Dunn's come back from an injury. You have guys who are a part of this offensive line, and they have actually been a part of this offensive line for a while. Ethan Posick was on the line yesterday. You know, Jed Wills, who you could basically write him off at this moment anymore. I saw the ole that he gave yesterday. These are people that have been around. These are professional football players. But it is your job to manage them, and you have to manage them, and that's what you need to do. And if you're not able to manage them, then I have to call it into question, because that is a lot of responsibility to have. To be the play caller and to also be the head coach is a tremendous amount of responsibility to have. And some guys can handle it, and some guys are not able to handle it after a while. Some guys take it back over because they become desperate.
Well, we've talked before about, and it's crazy. It's crazy that just, you know, 7 weeks in, we are now reevaluating everybody as if
1-6 does that to you, bud.
I know, as if none of this stuff happened before. But we had said Stefanski had definitely separated himself. You know, you have your Shanahans, your McVays, and you know, they're not having great years, obviously. So injuries are a part of all of this. But you have your certain guys in the league that separate themselves from the pack. And Stefanski, I thought, was someone who did with his play calling. And now it all looks bad again. It all looks, I mean, if you were just dropped in on this Browns team, you would think Stefanski was a rookie head coach. Would you not? Just based on what you've seen this year, that they lead the league in penalties, the fact that it's every five plays, somebody is lining up wrong. That speaks to something. And it's not like I think Stefanski got stupid overnight or forgot how to coach, because we saw a mastery in play calling at the end of last year. We saw it at times with Baker Mayfield, too, till Baker got injured. We saw a coach that definitely brought competence to an organization and to a football team that we just hadn't seen much of that. Mm-hmm. And now, 7 games in, it looks like it's all gone.
You know what you never see out of a fifth-year head coach? Being baffled by what is happening on the field. And they keep going back and showing him just like he doesn't even know what the players on the field are doing half the time, because it's not what they called. And you see him, you know, mouthing like, what the bleep is going on here?
So what happened? What changed? It can't just be, all right, it's not Joe Flacco, it's Deshaun Watson. What about everybody else? Who is not getting the guys lined up? Are they the only thing that's changed? Obviously, Van Pelt is out. You do have a new offensive coordinator. You also do have a new offensive line coach, but does that make
new
a difference
back
in the
Bill Callahan's? Bill Callahan wasn't everybody's buddy, and I think that we might be seeing some of that, but I can't, you know, he made the decision to go coach with his son. I thought they made the right decision and not stand in his way, because he could have just retired if he wanted to, and then you'd still be stuck without him. And maybe we are seeing the difference in Wyatt Teller being on the line and not being on the line. Your guess is as good as mine. Zach Zinter, I think, has some promise. I don't think he's ready to start in the NFL, and he did not start yesterday. And Juan Jones, I think, is playing with a knee injury. So you have these things going against you, but it's still your job to get these guys ready. And the lack of detail to me has become alarming, to the point of, are you just throwing your hands up because you don't believe that the quarterback has it? What are we doing here? Which is a question I hate asking, because there's no answer to what are we doing here. Because I can't get answers. I'll never get answers in a press conference from the head coach. It's just not, you can let him go and you're not going to get answers from him. So I'm not going to get any of that. So it becomes more and more frustrating over time. Because now there is no Deshaun Watson anymore on the field. You can't just hide behind that anymore. And that includes you and me, who do like the head coach. Can't do that no more. Mm-mm. So whether or not Dorian Thompson-Robinson is the next Patrick Mahomes, or he is just another name that's on the jersey, it's your job to get him ready as a staff. Or if it's Jameis Winston, it's your job to get him ready as a staff. I'm not going to sit here if they go out and get smoked against the Steelers on Thursday, on November 21st, and go, well, guys, Deshaun Watson, no sirree. If that word comes out, if that name comes out of my mouth on that Friday, you all come around the table and slap me. Ain't going to be his fault. No. 216-474-0092. I got to get this in. Is it a loser mentality for me to say that the Guardians had a fantastic season?
No, they had a fantastic season. I'm glad you're asking me this today, yes, as opposed to like the night of the game when you lose to the Yankees, and I hate the Yankees, and I hate everything about them.
I knew if I said it on Saturday night, I was going to get killed for it.
Right, when we have some time to step away, and it's not like I thought the Yankees were head over heels that much better than us. I mean, I know 4-1 is 4-1, but that wasn't your typical 4-1. That wasn't like, oh, we didn't belong on the same field as them. What I lament is just a lot of stuff I didn't see all year popped up, and you wondered if the stage was a little too bright for certain guys. I mean, Rocchio in the field all of a sudden. I mean, what do you have, three errors? Mm-hmm. I mean, that kind of stuff really, really held him back. Class A, I mean, two series, three different times it looked like he wanted to be anywhere else in the world and was not that cocky guy with swagger that comes in and shuts guys down at the end of the game and makes them look stupid. Like, that was gone. You knew you had to depend on stuff like that to try to beat the Yankees and their payroll. And I know there were other people saying, stop bringing up the Yankees payroll. Well, it's always going to be a part of this. You had the lowest payroll by far of the final four teams. Yeah, that does matter. There's a reason why every one of our fans wants us to spend more money. It's because we do think payroll matters before the season starts.
Yeah.
And it clearly does. That doesn't mean we couldn't beat them. That wasn't the end all. That wasn't the only reason we lost the series. But we know their stars stepped up. Ours didn't. Yes, it was a great season, Kenny. It was a great season. It's one that I think we both share in this, and you were more dialed in than I was in a regular season. But I had more fun talking about this baseball team than I have in a long time. It set me right back to 2016 and the 2017 regular season. It really did.
I had a lot of fun. I think we can separate ownership, market, the problems with baseball, and the players that are there. I found the players to be a likable group. I've not always been able to say that about a professional team. I found that they were likable people, likable players. The coaches were likable. There were a lot of things that you could get behind. They were not expected to do as well as they did this year. They did very, very good. They had a very good season. It didn't go our way, and that's not an excuse for them having their lights too bright out in New York. It isn't an excuse for that, and it isn't an excuse for Steven Vogt, because at this time next year, I don't know how next year is going to play out. You know, they could all of a sudden get found out. Some of the stuff that we thought was going to happen this year could all of a sudden happen next year. Like, are we out of the woods with the whole Shane Bieber thing? No. What are we going to do with Gavin Williams? With Tristan McKenzie, what are we going to do there? What's happening there? So there's decisions we have to make, and then we have to figure out, has Josh Naylor played his last game as a Cleveland Guardian? Do some people really want that to happen, or are they just mad that the series didn't go our way? Are we ready to try to take Junkenzie Noel out of right field and try to put him at first base? Should we focus our efforts on Junkenzie Noel in his future instead of Josh Naylor? Maybe that's the point. What do we do with Bo Naylor? Because he doesn't contribute a whole lot on defense, and he's not contributing a whole lot on offense, but he's a very young player. These are all things that we have to get into. And Emmanuel Clase's headspace going into next year as well. That is going to be at people's top of mind. So these are things that we have to pay attention to, Tone, the entire way through. Absolutely granted. And I don't want to have to take back things that I say. Just going back from this year and seeing what it is, I thought it was a hell of a season. I had a lot of fun. I watch more Guardians baseball this year than I have in 3 years. Season by season. And I'm thankful I got to do it. I'm thankful to see him. I'm thankful for the season. But when you go 76 years, 76? 76?
Yeah, 48.
Yeah, 48. 76 years without winning a World Series, it's going to fall on deaf ears to certain fans out there. And you could say it's a Dolan issue. The Mets spent over $300 million. They're in the same spot we are right now this morning. And they spent the money that people wanted to spend on Francisco Lindor, and he was a tremendous player for them down the stretch. MVP candidate. If there was no Shohei Ohtani, he would be the MVP. They're in the same spot we are. I would like them to spend more money, but just spending money shows me that they're not going to be able to just go out there and cure everything. But it helps. But to me, that's a systemic problem with Major League Baseball. It's not an excuse for the Dolans, but that's a systemic problem with Major League Baseball.
It's a systemic problem
with the fans' interest in the game.
If they get back here, and I think fans had plenty of interest this year. I think ratings were up. Attendance was definitely up.
That's true.
It was an awesome year.
And the attendance was up early this year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. May.
Usually
in
it's
May.
Like,
how many sellouts?
Okay, in August,
but
we'll
what
do
I'm
the
pointing
sellouts
out,
then. Yeah.
What I'm pointing out, it's hard not to do the big picture thing because I know you don't want to because I know we want to talk about the Guardians. In basketball, they've done their very best to fix that. At first, we thought every player in every city in a flyover state was going to leave. And it hasn't been that way. They have the second apron, and they've been able to change that. And for the better and even for the worse, because there's some players now that some teams are stuck with. In the NFL, they have it almost perfect. A player can go to Kansas City and be the biggest name in the sport, and the sport's the biggest thing in America. In Major League Baseball, it's always a given matter of time. And there's a problem with the game when I look at my players who play for the Cleveland Guardians and I look at them going, are you guys having an audition to play for the Yankees? Or are we trying to beat the Yankees?
I mean, it's,
they don't audition for other teams and other games.
Yeah, it's 26 teams. I mean, that's literally and, how many teams are going through the same boat. But what I'm saying is that this team, they've made the playoffs 6 of the last 9 years. For them to get to the ALCS, the fact that the Yankee people, just the way they talked about you going into the series, which was, oh, we're not even thinking about you. That, to me, it almost speaks higher. It speaks more highly of where this team is and what they were able to accomplish this year. And the fact that the Yankees didn't look all that much greater. It wasn't like they were the unstoppable force. You were in every single one of these games. If your stars played like stars, and I'm talking Jose, Clase, if they played like they were capable of, you had every shot in the world to beat them. So it's not like next year I'm going to be going, we got no shot. No, we absolutely have a shot. But what I will tell you is this. If they get right back to the ALCS next year and they lose 4-1 again, yeah, I'm going to be disappointed, and I'm going to be upset. I'm going to say, why didn't we, what could we have done to get over the hump? Because now you know you are on a similar playing field, despite that payroll disadvantage.
Mitch, please.
All right, guys, we've got some audio from Amari Cooper, the new Bills wide receiver, who we talked about earlier in the show. Right. Had a touchdown or this past week. Had this to say about the Bills fan base in connection to his previous fan bases.
It's very impressive. I mean, you know, the fans, they it has a good feel to the game. Like I said, it just felt different, the fans, for some reason. I kind of got the warning throughout the week that the fans are very passionate. I have been a part of a lot of very passionate fan bases. You know, I played for the Raiders, the Cowboys, the Browns, Alabama. But this one, it seems a little bit more heightened. So I guess that's a good thing.
You know, this fits in with something we said earlier in the show, that in the end, it doesn't matter what team any of these players are on. They're going to say, they could be in Jacksonville.
Yep.
They will say you are the best fans in the country.
Buffalo is good.
It is. Of course it is.
Yeah, but had he went to the Panthers.
Oh, there's one thing that is sure about these fans down here in the Carolinas.
They're battle tested. They keep pounding.
I know fans don't love to hear that because they do. You know, my whole life I've been hearing we have the best fans in the world. And I've gotten a chance to go to some other places. I've come back here, and I think a lot of it checks out. I think we are really, really good fans. I think there are a lot of other places that also say the exact same thing. And the players, they don't really really see anything different from city to city.
That's why I was so shocked at some of the stuff I was seeing yesterday. Because, again, and so many people, I don't believe you. Okay, I'm only telling you guys, that looking into the microphone or looking into the camera on the microphone, I can only tell you about what I went with. It was not a topic of conversation in the seats about the fans' reaction to Deshaun Watson yesterday. It just was not. To the group of fans that I was with, it was not a conversation. It was, he got hurt. That guy down there, he's cheering. Yeah, but these people are telling him to shut up. And then that was it. That was it. Get home. There it is. And Browns fans are this. This is why we're the worst fan base in the NFL. Get 70,000 people in there. There's going to be a couple of goofballs there who espouse some opinions you ain't going to agree with. And it's going to look ugly. It's going to be that way. But to them, every single fan base is the same. If I were in Pittsburgh, if I were born in Aliquippa, Pennsylvania, and I was on 93.7 The Fan in Pittsburgh, guess how I would feel about Pittsburgh Steelers fans? Guess how I'd feel about Carolina Panthers fans if I was from Mooresville, North Carolina?
What if you took that money in Milwaukee?
I wouldn't have felt that. That's why I didn't take that money in Milwaukee. We've been over this several times. Can you not say that when Jeff's walking by?
Three times the salary, I believe, was what was thrown around.
Proposed. You can't say I don't love the fans. I turned down three times more in Milwaukee to stay with you.
By
so I don't want to hear nothing.
By the end of the week, it'll be five times. So here's hypothetical. Here is the reality, though. This guy had the worst relationship with a fan base than anybody else in the league. And I would say, could I not argue in sports? Can you remember a guy this hated by his fan base?
Who?
Deshaun.
No.
Who had a worse relationship? He didn't do himself any favors. And I mean, we can go over that. And again, we could say yesterday, the two of us, and I think everybody on this show, say when we saw tears from Deshaun Watson, we did find it in ourselves, no matter all the bad things we've said about him, felt bad.
It confirmed that he did care.
Yes. Yes. And all,
the stuff that was being said about him not caring, he gets his paycheck. Like, no, that is a guy who questions whether or not he's ever going to play football again and whether it's even worth it to play football again. That's all there was there. I mean, that's...
But from moment one, this was not a player drafted here, right? And the player that left was very popular. Now, his popularity had started to wane a little bit, but still, Baker Mayfield, still very popular to this day in Cleveland. And so Deshaun had to hit the ground running. Instead, he hit the ground with a suspension. Then, the following year, did not play well to start out, showed rust, then started to play a little better, then got injured for the rest of the year. Came back this year, and he was terrible. And now he's injured again. So this fan base never warmed up to him, and let's be honest, he was never a good messenger. He never endeared himself to most of the fans. I know he did some work in the community. I want to point that out. He absolutely did some work, and there are some school districts here locally, and we'll say it, in the inner city, that they love Deshaun Watson. I mean, didn't he purchase the rings for Glenville?
He got the rings for Glenville.
Of course, to those kids, he is an influential figure in their lives. But to everybody else in Cleveland, he was as close to as despised as I've ever seen a Cleveland athlete.
And, I mean, yeah, you just said it right there. There's really no more I can really expand on it with.
Well, there's a problem with that. You're saying that like it's over. He's still got years on this contract.
Yeah, but him as a viable player, yesterday was the end. As far as
a guaranteed starting quarterback job.
And for Anthony and for Browns fans.
There are some
fans.
There's
an ownership group. There's a front office. There's a coaching staff.
No, they're ready to make that change. I can't sit there and tell you 100%. I'm not going to tell you 100%. They're drafting a quarterback. It's going to happen. Get your draft cards ready. Get out your books. Whether it's Hub Arkish, whether it's Dane Brugler, the great Dane Brugler, get them all out again, guys. It's going to happen. They're drafting a quarterback. There's no point of wasting your time and breath on any other position. Unless Dorian Thompson-Robinson comes out and plays well. Even if Jameis Winston were to go out there and light up the Cleveland sky, those other QBs would have to play so terribly for them to not draft a quarterback. They're taking a quarterback. It's the one they can afford, and it's the one that can get people to buy in again. They're drafting a quarterback, so get it ready. And then that guy's going to go out there, and then you can bring Deshaun Watson back and have him on the sidelines and maybe let him take a breather for a second and know that the world or the weight of the world isn't on his shoulders. And then if he has to go in, we'll see where it goes.
Well, I wonder, all hands on deck already yesterday. Vrabel was on the sidelines. Depot
was
back.
I thought he was going to have a game day.
He wasn't. He wasn't supposed to be.
Yeah.
He's really not
down there, and I went, oh, that's interesting.
We've confirmed this. He's barely been around. He has not been around as much as I think some people thought he would be. And now all of a sudden he's on the sidelines, and Paulie D.
The weather was good.
The weather was very nice.
Weather was good.
I'd say he has to clean out his office. He doesn't have an office. There's nothing to clean out.
You know, we've only just begun. Of all the conversation and all the thoughts out there, we've only just begun.
Hey, Cavs Wednesday.
Here we go.
Let's go.
I'm going to tell you this.
Evan Mobley, Leap.
We're not supposed to worry about Max Strus out for 6 weeks.
Evan Mobley will make up for
there
all
it is.
Of that.
This is the year.
Ken. I'm not talking about a DTR leap, okay, or Myles Garrett leaping over the line to block a field goal. I'm talking about an Evan Mobley career leap.
Let me just say, 99% of Browns fans are great folks. I'm not going to let 1% of Browns fans are out there whooping it up ruin the experience for all Browns fans, and neither should Browns fans.
I wonder how it's going to go today.
Straight out.
Because I've seen some people blasting Cleveland. Then I saw Mina Kimes was like, wait, we're making him the victim now? Deshaun Watson. So I'm curious to see how this plays throughout the day because everybody is going to have a big take on this.
We'll be back tomorrow, 6 to 10.